You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 312, and we got a lot to talk about this week. Honestly, not a lot happened this week. We don't really have a whole lot to talk about.
New Metal Week!
Let the bodies hit the floor! And we are back on Punk News Podcast, episode 312. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I am here with the new classic crew. First up, we got news editor, reviews writer, interviewer, Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, what's happening out there in L.A.?
What's happening? Man, I saw Gloss on Saturday. They live up to all the hype. Awesome show. But yeah, no, things are good. How are things in Philly?
Things in Philly are going okay. Not a whole lot of shows past couple weeks, but some cool ones coming up. Morrissey, Lee Scratch Perry, and some cool punk ones coming up too that I can't remember. Oh, Alice Bag. But we are also here with Managing Editor Adam White. Managing Editor Adam White, early reports are saying that you are enjoying the adult beverages. Is that not true?
Yes, I am. I'm drinking wine, John. I don't want this show to be exclusively about me drinking week on week, although that has been the theme for the past 2 weeks, but it is strictly coincidence. But I'm kind of drunk on red wine right now, so we'll just have to see what happens.
Well, like, you know what they say, a drunk Adam White is better than no Adam White at all. Let's get right into it because we got a lot to cover this week. A lot of news happening. Let's read some mail first. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is just the first one, just a quick little one from our friend Rich out in the UK who's been writing in quite frequently, but I appreciate it. Here's what Rich in the UK said to us at Punk News. That Cockney accent was worse than Dick Van Dyke. Please don't attempt the West Midlands one, which is Ozzy Osbourne. So there you go. I'm getting hate for my Cockney accent. This next one is from Danny. I was so happy that you guys did the ska episode. I was smiling when you kicked off the show with the beat. Once I discovered ska music in high school, it became the backbone to my musical identity. I never bothered dressing like a rude boy or any of that stuff, but once I discovered ska, it became the music that I would go back to for the rest of my life, even though I discovered punk 4 or 5 years before. So being surprised with that podcast today was great. I have a suggestion for Adam on new ska artists to check out. Adam, check out Re Mastro Giovanni. He's a Japanese solo artist who talks about specifically aiming to elevate ska music as a musical form. He really makes some interesting and great songs. I think he comes at his music from a more modern pop aesthetic as opposed to rock or punk, but I would still say you should check him out. His 2015 album is self-titled. Aaron from Real Big Fish often talks about how he can't stand the idea that a ska musician to grow as an artist, but they have to move away from ska. I think Ray Mastro Giovanni is an artist that shows that Aaron is right and that you can further develop the core of ska and elevate it into something higher. Lastly, I wanted to mention my thoughts on the outdated concept of ska waves. I've believed for a long time, mostly from conversations on the old about.com ska message board, that the idea of ska waves is a moot and now pointless thing which should only serve the purpose of putting ska history in a certain context. John actually hit it on the head when you talked about how ska is so popular in Mexico and other Hispanic countries right now. Ska waves are about geography, not a description of the style of the ska played or what other genres it's been blended with. Waves mark when ska moved from place to place and had a surge of popularity when it landed. First wave is Jamaica, second wave is England, third wave America. Now that ska is international with scenes all over the world, what could a fourth wave be delineated by? Maybe it's the fourth wave that would have been that it went international or that it's huge in Mexico, but I doubt we'll get that sort of consensus from everyone in the ska world to agree what a fourth wave is. That is unless someone from SpaceX starts a ska band on Mars, which we know is impossible because the rudiments taught us that Martians don't skank. The days of a fourth wave ska ever being marked are seemingly long past. Thanks again for the great show, signed Danny.
I was going to yell the moon, And then I stopped myself by saying, well, Moon Ska was a label, so that's kind of confusing. And then he went to Mars. So me and this guy are on the right. We're right in the same like wavelength here. So good.
I'd like to skank on Saturn. I think it'd be pretty cool. Or Mars. That'd be pretty cool.
Well, on Saturn, you'd probably be crushed into a pulpy mess by the gravity. So
that's why you have to skank extra hard on Saturn.
Mm.
Isn't Saturn gaseous?
I'm pretty sure there is something within the general Saturn vicinity that would crush you into a pulpy mess. I'm not an astrophysicist or anything, but I'm pretty sure.
Maybe we could skank on the rings. That'd be pretty cool.
I'm not even going to get into what those actually are.
Well, they're like debris.
Yeah, it's like a field of ice. It's not like a big glass dance floor.
You don't think it'd be cool to skank on Saturn's rings, Adam White? You don't think that'd be cool?
You can kill yourself however you want, John. I'm just going to keep drinking this wine.
Listen, I'm a dreamer, Adam White, and so if you want to be mired down by reality, that's fine. But I will never give up my dream of skanking on Saturn, and I'll make that happen. But anyway, a couple of things to talk before we get into the news proper. First of all, this is apropos of everything and nothing. As a side note, if you go to the originalmisfits.com, it's a website that just launched a couple of days ago or even yesterday, you can sign up for a newsletter, and maybe you'll get the first tip on what's happening with the Original Misfits. Maybe they'll announce who the drummer is. I don't know, but I signed up. But I heard this radio interview with Jerry Only, and what Jerry Only said is, they said, well, Jerry, are you guys going to do a tour after the two Riot Fest show with the Original Misfits? As, of course, you probably know, the, quote, Original Misfits are playing Riot Fest. It's Glenn Danzig, Jerry Only, Doyle, and the unknown drummer as of right now. That's not really the Original Misfits, but it's, you know, it's classic era Misfits, more or less. So anyway, Jerry Only said, well, we're not sure about that, but we'll do it. He basically said, we'll do it if Riot Fest goes well. And then he says, I'm to prepare for Riot Fest, we've got the set basically mapped out. I'm playing the set four times a day, every day, as fast as I can. And, you know, the public tide against Jerry Only has turned very negatively in the past 5 years. You know, it's turned against him the past 15 years, but especially the last 5 years, it's really turned against him. I mean, Adam White and Ricky, do you agree that the tide against Jerry Only is probably as bad as it's ever been?
Yeah, but in some ways, rightly so, which we can get into later if we want to.
But no, go ahead. Say why.
Well, I mean, you know, I talked about this a year ago when I saw them. I saw the newest version of the Misfits. Jerry, his son, and then who's their drummer?
Eric the Goat Archie.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it was just I even reviewed it. It was kind of uncomfortable. I mean, hearing the songs and all that stuff was great because I'd never seen any form of the Misfits before live. But I mean, when I went there, they had like T-shirts that had like their face, the new band's faces, on the Static Age album. And so, like, I'm not sure where this guy is, where his head's at. So, I mean, where, what more can they do? And also, I don't know if you've listened to the new Misfits Friday the 13th EP. It's garbage.
Yeah, I have stopped collecting Misfits vinyl because I spent like $40 on the last full length and I felt burned, man. So I'm like, you know what, I'm not getting any Misfits vinyl. I'll still get the cheapo CDs when I can, but I'm not spending any real money on new Misfits anymore.
I mean,
Adam White, do you have anything to add to that?
I was on the Ricky negativity train as far as the Misfits goes, really up until this reunion was announced. And I've mentioned this before, but I feel that since the reunion has been announced, and if Glenn and Jerry can make their peace, then I think Jerry's going to come out of this with a much better public persona.
I agree. But the thing is, like, I'd want to see that first before I change my mind. Who knows if they'll even make it to the second Riot Fest show?
Well, so Adam White brings up a good point, and that's what I'm getting to. Jerry Only said he's doing the set four times a day, every day, as fast as he can. He said this in the interview. And, you can say Jerry Only's been trying to make the Misfits family friendly, and that's lame. You can say Jerry Only has been crass with his commercialization of the Misfits, and that's probably true, too. But I'll tell you, Don't you both think that Jerry Only is not going to phone it in at the live shows? Jerry Only is going there to kick ass because he truly believes the Misfits are the best or one of the very greatest bands ever, and he feels a personal duty to really put on a great live show. Don't you agree with that?
For these shows, yes. Unless, and the only reason it wouldn't be a good show is if they start bickering and fighting on stage. But other than that, no. Everyone's expecting this to be a good show. So I think I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's feeling the pressure for this because this is big.
Well, see, I don't think it's pressure. I think it's ego, which I appreciate. Adam White, I think you were going to say something.
Well, just all evidence of the past 30 years of his life are that Jerry Only really, really, really wants to be in the Misfits. So this for him should be, I'm guessing, as much of a dream come true as it is for people that are going to see it.
Oh, see, I kind of disagree with you. I don't know if Jerry Only wants to be in the Misfits. I think Jerry Only wanted to be in Jerry Only's Misfits, but I could be wrong. But I was no matter what you can label him, I definitely feel as though he feels as though the Misfits have a certain legacy, which paid proper tribute to. So he's going there to kick ass and beat all the other bands at Riot Fest because the Misfits are the Misfits. It's not, I mean, there's a lot of money involved, but there's pride and ego involved, which is almost even more important, I think.
I mean, like, there's a degree to which I can sort of sympathize with being in his position. So let's say you're Jerry Only. You are part of the Misfits. You are, as far as you're concerned, let's say this is back when Glenn was still in the band. You know, this is your thing. You have this incredibly distinctive, you know, rock and roll band that you're going to be in for as long as you can, that you're going to do as many cool things as you can with, that you're in love with this band. It is your band. It's your ticket. You have made a career of being a rock and roll guy. This is amazing. And then Glenn leaves to go have a solo career. And then what do you do? I mean, like, take off the music critic hat and just put on the Jerry Only hat, where you're just kind of like standing there with your bass being like, fuck, What do I do now? Well, I still wanted to keep this going. Well, you know, well, fuck it. I'm going to keep it going. And, you know, I can't say I agree with all of his business decisions about it, or even all of his artistic decisions, or maybe most of his artistic decisions. But
or any of his artistic decisions.
But I can totally appreciate that, like, that, you know, he was kind of like left standing there with his dick in his hand being like, hey, we had a band here. What the fuck? And then he wanted to keep it going. I can appreciate that. I mean, I'm not gonna stand up and support it as a artistic thing or anything. But you know, I can understand why.
I think American Psycho is a great album. I just don't know. Maybe he just shouldn't. They just should not have called it the Misfits when they reformed like that. I don't know.
No one seems to be buying onto my hypothesis, but I think my hypothesis will prove itself true, in that a large part of this is Jerry Only's pride in the band itself, not purely financial. So Jerry Only is going there to kick ass, and I know Danzig goes to kick ass because I've seen Danzig a bunch of times, and Danzig always plays to kick ass. So I think the Misfits reunion is actually going to be really awesome. I know a lot of reunions like Smashing Pumpkins, Pixies were lame because they were cash grabs and the band didn't care. I think there's a certain ego and a certain pride involved with the Misfits, so if they suck, they would feel bad about it, where I don't think Frank Black cares the Pixies. So I think everybody involved in this is going to kick ass, and I think it's going to be cool. We're going to talk about one other, I guess, a non-news thing is, I guess it was last week. Was it last week? Last week. Last week, I challenged. Last week, both Ricky Frankel and Adam White said they didn't really listen to too much hip-hop at all. Adam White said he didn't really listen to hip-hop because in high school, the cool kids listened to hip-hop. And so because the cool kids didn't listen to hip-hop, he didn't want to listen to it because that was their music, and he wanted to listen to outsider music. And he had never been given a proper entry point to hip-hop. Ricky Frankel said he didn't listen to hip-hop because he liked guitar music. So what I did is I gave him homework assignments. I said, listen to these five hip-hop albums. Listen to KRS-One's Return of the Boom Bap. Listen to the Beastie Boys' Paul's Boutique. Listen to Digital Underground's Sex Packets. Listen to Ice Cube's America's Most Wanted. And listen to Scarface's Mr. Scarface's Back. I also, off-air, I also gave him a bonus listening Old Dirty Bastards, Return to the 36 Chambers, the dirtier version, which is the first Old Dirty Bastard album. Adam White, how did your dalliance with hip-hop go with the five hip-hop classics as demarcated by Johnny G?
You want me to run down the list here?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I feel somewhat inadequately prepared to go and assess like a whole genre of music based on like six touch points that you've given me.
It's like that Onion article, like Pitchfork gives music a 7.2. Yeah. Adam White gives hip hop a 7.2.
Yeah. I don't want to do that because I'm missing so much of the connecting tissue and so much of the context at the time with a lot of this stuff that there's things that I like, but then there's things that I'd be tempted to write off as being things I don't like, and I don't want to write them off being like, you know, this has no relevancy to me as a, you know, 34-year-old white man sitting in my basement, right? Like, it's, I don't want to make that equation. But anyways, so I'm running through the list here for you. First of all, KRS-One's Return of the Boom Bap. Into it. I'm cool with this. KRS-One's an easy in for me. If for no other reason than, I can appreciate all the dancehall influence that comes through in his stuff because I'm more familiar with that than really maybe I would be with a lot of hip hop. And it's really like anything that I would have had as a mental touch point for hip hop that I liked would have been from that era anyways. So that all kind of, that clicks for me. So I'm on board with the KRS-One record. That's cool. The Beastie Boys one was a cheat. I've been into the Beastie Boys since I was a kid. So that's not one that I had to really work that hard for. I've heard Paul's Boutique many times. I haven't actually heard Paul's Boutique lately. So it was actually good to revisit it, and really revisit it from the perspective of seeing how it was being so pioneering with samples and with production, with everything else. Really, when I was a kid, I think like a lot of punk kids in the 90s, Ill Communication and Check Your Head were kind of the two records that were really important. So, and Paul's Boutique was one that we all at the time just overlooked. I felt like we didn't think it was, I don't know if we didn't think it was good or we just didn't think it was worth our attention. Like, I sort of feel that like Paul's Boutique is like Weezer's Pinkerton.
Not as many like hits.
Yeah, like we're like at the time everyone was like meh, but then like years later everyone was like holy fuck, this was kind of brilliant. We should all pay more attention to this. So I haven't heard Paul's Boutique probably in 10 years. So it was cool to go back to that. So that was good. But again, easy. I've always sort of listened to the Beastie Boys, so that's not a big deal. Ice Cube, America's Most Wanted. I'm into it. I'm down with this. I get that we are starting to get into hip hop that's more doing the gangster persona and all that kind of stuff. But with this one still on the production wise, on the actual musical side of it, it's closer to that Beastie Boys KRS-One realm of hip hop that I am more comfortable with. So see, you know what, that it's just it worked. And for all of the guns and crime stuff that's on it, it feels more like I can take that and contextualize it as being like, well, you know, that's all tied into certain social issues and messages and things from that time. And it doesn't strike me as something that I need to take issue with, at least at this point in history.
Three for three.
So far, so good. Okay, Digital Underground's going to be harder because Digital Underground's way more eclectic, right? Now, I don't know exactly what you wanted me to listen to in particular from Digital Underground. So I listened to the, what was it? The EP.
I thought I posted Sex Packets, the album.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know what exactly you wanted me to listen to for them. So I don't think I listened to Sex Packets, the album. Hold on, I'll tell you what I listened to. I listened to the Digital Underground EP, the Rhino High Five one, the one that has.
Oh yeah, that's not as good.
Right. Well, so I listened to that, and then I listened to the best of. So I've heard stuff from Sex Packets. So in any case, I mean, Digital Underground's way more eclectic for me. Like Shock G's vocals are way weirder than I was initially like mentally prepared to grasp as I was listening to this. I'm like, oh, this is getting goofy. Like, I don't know if I'm down with the goofy, but it's like over the course of a week, the Digital Underground stuff has grown on me more and I'm appreciating it a little bit more. Now you're starting to get more R&B stuff that's kind of entering into the mix here. And true, I think true. I like that less.
Oh,
okay. And I think that, like, thinking back to like the comment that you said about the stuff that I didn't like so much in high school, I think the stuff that I was trying to rebel against in high school is probably stuff that had way more of the R&B influence worked into it at that point. So I can kind of start to hear that coming through with some of the Digital Underground stuff. But, you know, I am for the most part down with this one. So we'll give this on the positive side as well. There's definitely some shit on there that's weird. Scarface, Mr. Scarface is back. This loses me. Now
that one lost me too, actually.
Now, so this loses me. Now it's for a couple reasons, I think. I totally appreciate the like listening to it. I'm like, all right, this guy is good at what he is doing, and I get that. So there's no slight there. But you get two elements that start to be introduced into this that don't work for me. And this is where I'm not sure if I don't have context or not. So the one is the gangster stuff on this seems way more gratuitous. And it didn't bother me really at all with the Ice Cube record, but on this one it does. And I don't know exactly what it is, if it's just maybe played up more. But then what this also does, and this is going to open up like a whole can of worms about my whole general psyche, is that I can't deal with the sex stuff on here.
It goes into some weird areas.
It goes into some weird areas. And I realized, and I look at like how I treat music, like music for me is not a sex thing. Like, punk rock is the least sexy form of music that I could come up with. Like, if anything, it is like aggressively asexual. Like, it's like we're listening to a lot of music that is just about like about anger and about social issues or about just fucking goofing off with your friends. Like, there's not a lot in punk rock that really touches on sex at all. And every time I encounter it with music, I'm always just sort of like, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta turn this down before someone hears this. I'm like, I was listening to like, no, this is a super extreme example, but I was listening to the new record from Peaches, and like, holy crap, like there's like a lot of like aggressive sexual stuff that's on that record, right? So whenever I encounter that on something, I'm just like, I don't want anyone to hear me listening to this, because it feels like it's not something that I want to admit that I'm actually listening to.
Do you not like how he refers to women, or do you feel uneasy when he's talking about his own sexual experiences?
It's a layered thing. On the one hand, I'm uncomfortable, I think, hearing anyone talk that explicitly about sex in music. It just is not something that I'm comfortable with. And this isn't me being a prude. It's just like, I don't know. It just feels like it's not lyrics that I need to hear. But then, yeah, like how he's talking about women filters into it, how that's all getting like looped back into the violence is kind of tying into it. And again, it didn't bother me on the Ice-T record, but it was maybe just because the Ice Cube record, right? But I don't know if it was because the Ice Cube record seemed like it was coming more from it was more like a reaction to kind of like lived experience of what was going on in their communities. So you're going to play up that kind of thing, like you know, here's the reality that Ice Cube is seeing on the ground, and he's going to dramatize that a little bit, and you know, make it a little bit tougher as it goes into a lyrical form. But it never seemed to be as like self-aggrandizing as the Scarface one. So there's something about it that just like I'm listening to it and I'm like, I totally get that this is good, like from a musical standpoint, but that's where he started to lose me. Then we get to your bonus one, which was unfair.
Unfair.
Which was unfair. So, have you mentioned what the bonus one is? So you wanted us to listen to...
Old Dirty Bastards, Return of the 36 Chambers, the dirty version.
Yeah, okay, the dirty version of Old Dirty Bastards, Return of the 36 Chambers.
Well, I should qualify. And this is a problem, like, streaming services instead of, like, CDs, is there's only one version. The first Wu-Tang record is called Enter the 36 Chambers. So ODB's album is called Return to the 36 Chambers, the dirty version. There is no clean version. It's like a joke. You know what I mean?
All right. So in any case, I listened to ODB's Return, and that was not fair to throw that at us without having thrown at us Enter the Wu-Tang. If for no other reason than by the time people that were, I think, listening to rap during this era would have been well familiar with both Wu-Tang and the stuff that ODB was doing as part of that group. So by the time that his own record, which references back to their big record, comes out, they could approach it being like, all right, we know ODB's a little bit fucked up and weird, so this is going to be his fucked up and weird record. I come into this not being that familiar at all with Wu-Tang, and I'm just like, this is all over the place and insane. And then, because John, I'm a brown noser studious student here, I went back and listened to Enter the Wu-Tang for no other reason than I'm like, I gotta put some context on this, because John has a fucked up curriculum that he's given us. So I don't know, like, there's still, I listen to that record, and like, yeah, there's a few songs that are really fun on it, and then there's a lot of dumb filler, and then there's a lot of stuff that is just, that strikes me as just like filler, where if I was to hear it on a punk record, I'd be like, this is filler, like this song happens to be going nowhere in particular for 5 minutes, and okay, we've now killed 5 minutes. So I don't know, there's stuff on that one that I feel that, like, within the context of everything else that was going on in the Wu-Tang universe, fits a lot better. But me coming too cold without having that in my head first was a little bit like, why is John making me listen to this?
Well, the reason I wanted you to listen to that is because that is an exceptionally weird record. And honestly, the first five records I gave to you are all from 88 to 93. And they all kind of are anchored in that, you know, Public Enemy style, boom, 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 beat. And so I just wanted to give you something that is from a different realm sonically, but also lyrically. Like, generally, with all those first five records that I mentioned, there's a general sort of social context addressed from different angles, whereas ODB doesn't really address much social context at all. He's just crazy. He's literally crazy. And so I just wanted to gauge your reaction for something that I think is a great record, but it took me a while. It's actually my favorite Wu-Tang record. It takes a while to get that record because it's so far out and so weird.
Yeah, and I could definitely see. Now, if I had to look at this group and be like, what from here is John's favorite thing? And I was thinking about this.
Oh, those five albums?
Of those five albums. Like, which of this is where John's not giving it to me because it is a pillar of the genre, but he's giving it to me because John really personally likes this band. And ODB aside, I feel that, like, of these, you probably fall a little bit on the KRS-One end, but I think that you fall on the Digital Underground end of things.
I would say they're probably all equally my favorites, but you are correct in that Digital Underground isn't often mentioned in the pillar that those other four are mentioned in, and I do feel that they are a little bit underappreciated. They're huge in the Bay Area, but outside the Bay Area, they're regarded as a novelty act, but they're really not a novelty act. Adam, I will send you Sex Packets, the album, and you don't have to do that by next week, but you can check that out and see what I see in Digital Underground.
John, you need send me nothing. I have this amazing service where I can type in a band and it plays me their music.
Well, Adam, you are a good sport. I think 4 out of 5 is pretty good, to tell you the truth. And Adam, is it possible to say that you may be becoming a fan of hip-hop? Is it possible?
I will say that there's a direction that I want to explore. And I don't know if we have explored it yet with these things, because I can see where it diverges. Like, I can see where it would lose me. So, like, the early 90s stuff is all, by and large, I'm cool with. Like, I'll listen to that and have fun. And then I feel that as we got past, I don't know, as we got past 95 and then into the late 90s and the early 2000s, that's really where it was, where what I was exposed to was either turning me off or doing nothing for me.
You know whose fault that is? Puff Daddy. Puff Daddy, and I'm not a big Puff Daddy fan, but Puff Daddy is really the guy that, you know, took, I guess, the idea of the Chronic, like what they would call new wave of rap, and made it very R&B focused, very, you know, very gangster to a degree, almost misogynist to a degree, and kind of removed the social level or the philosophical level from hip hop and made it strictly pop music.
All right, I can accept that. So, but on that same note, there had to have been, and I know there was, an underground counter movement to that that wasn't maybe getting the press, but was happening. It's that's what I want to hear.
That's Hieroglyphics.
That's what I want to hear.
But also Nas to a degree. And I mean, listen, there's a million great hip hop acts from the late 90s, but that's why the mainstream hip hop kind of fell off, in my opinion. But like there's a lot of underground hip hop acts, you know, Hieroglyphics, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, what the hell's his name? Dr. Doom. What's his name? Oh, Dr. Doom, whatever his real name is. Doom, whatever. I can't remember his name. But he's got some Dr. Octagon. He's got some far out records. So anyway, Adam White, kudos to you. Kudos to you. Ricky, what was your take on the five hip-hop classics as delineated by John?
Okay, so I don't think I'll go as detailed as Adam did. But so my when I finished listening to these, I came to this one question, and I just thought to myself, what happened? This is way better than any of the shit that especially is out now, at least in the more mainstream sphere. Let's just go with that. This was, you know, I enjoy, I mean, here's the thing. Did any of these things like hit it out of the park for me? Am I gonna be like, I'm gonna listen to this all the time now? No. Do I have more respect for the early hip hop stuff than I ever thought I would? Absolutely. That's where I was definitely surprised. I think my quote unquote favorite one, I think, was the KRS-One, then Beastie Boys, then was it the Humpty Dance, that one?
That's Digital Underground, yeah.
Digital Underground, and then Ice Cube, and then Mr. Scarface. I thought was so, like, the sex stuff didn't bother me that much, but it was just kind of like, It to me seemed like really kind of narcissistic. You know, there's a way to like tell stuff about your life that isn't like completely self-involved, and I kind of felt like some of this kind of went into that area. Old Dirty Bastard, I'll be honest, I couldn't get through it. I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like a lot of it now is so homogenized, and this stuff was really unique compared to what we have now, I think. I also agree, I'm not a huge fan of R&B mixed into it. I mean, you know. But overall, I think I have a lot more respect for it. I don't think you could call me a fan of hip-hop, but I think the early stuff, I think, is definitely definitely interesting.
Well, there you have it. Yeah. We have two converts on the way, listeners. Kudos to you, Ricky. And certainly their opinions are valid, and I appreciate their opinions. I will briefly defend Mr. Scarface. I would say out of those five, he might be my least favorite, but I am a huge I'm a huge Scarface fan, rather. But you know, they talk about how he focuses on sex and how he's narcissistic. That's kind of the character portrayed in that song, because if you really listen to that album, he goes on and on about how he's depressed and how he's not really able to interact with other people, which is something that was unique to hip-hop at the time. And there's one line in that record that I friggin' love. He's like having sex with a girl, and then he's got this one line. He says, "But the whole time I was staring at my 12-gauge, which I thought is such a messed up and perfectly Scarface line. So anyway, kudos to you, Adam and Ricky. Good job. Good work on keeping an open mind. I'm not sure my mind would be so open were the situation reversed. Speaking of open minds, Adam White, hit us with some open mind music.
All right. So
now that we're 45 minutes into the podcast.
Yeah, and we haven't actually talked about any punk music. So, we talked about the Misfits for a while, right?
Yeah.
So there we go. All right. So there is a. I'm going to play you something that has been stuck in my head for the weirdest, has nothing to do with the band reason. So there's a band out of Toronto. They've been on Buzz Records before. They've been on Telephone Explosion. They're called Adonis Adonis. Adonis Adonis. I'm never really sure. It's O-D-O-N-I-S. O-D-O-N-I-S. Their last record that came out last year, the year before, was called Hard Boiled, Soft Boiled. And it was a crazy split where it was about half of it was really industrially sounding punk, almost reaching into like Nine Inch Nails territory. And the other side of it was just like a wash in distortion shoegaze. It was a completely neat esoteric record in that way. Their new record that came out this year on Telephone Explosion is called Post Plague, and it is a complete 180 from that. Even it sounds nothing like it. It sounds like 80s goth. It's full of synths. There's a lot of Ministry that shows up in it. There's probably some Bauhaus, John, that shows up in it. Not the ska Bauhaus.
Yeah, I got hate for that. I was like, pearls before swine. Pearls before swine.
So it's quite an interesting record. It's really cool to get into. But there's a song on it called Nervous. And Nervous happens to call to mind, in my mind at least, the theme from the current smash hit Netflix show Stranger Things. It is so dead on to the theme music to that wonderful, wonderful show, which I'm on like episode 6 of, so don't fuck it up.
Wait,
for me.
You're not done. You haven't finished it yet.
No, I mean, here's the thing about having two kids, Ricky, you watch one episode of a show every 4 days.
It is, I gotta tell you, it is great. The whole thing is fantastic.
So we're getting there. We'll get there before Christmas. But but in any case, the song Nervous by Adonis Adonis, it so lives on that same level of like spooky synthy 80s stuff, especially in the intro, that it's super fun. So here you go. This is Adonis Adonis and Nervous for all you Stranger Things fans out there.
Yourself to
And that was Adam White bringing you the Adonis Adonis Band, reminiscing Stranger Things. Now, I'm still working through Game of Thrones, man. I'm only on season 5, halfway through. But listen, you know, this year, a lot of bad news in 2016. A lot of bad news in 2016. Let's just kick off the news portion with some good news for once. Tony Iommi, he says his cancer is in remission. As you all know, Tony Iommi, the famous guitar player of Black Sabbath, perhaps creator of heavy metal, had a serious cancer issue about 3 years ago or so. No one was sure how serious it was. Apparently, it was pretty serious because he had stage 3 lymphoma. But he told the Birmingham Mail, "I came back to the hospital straight after we finished a round of European dates, and the good news is that everything is all right up to this point. I am in remission, and hopefully this situation will continue." So I don't think there's a whole lot to say except for I'm glad Tony Iommi's getting better. Finally, some good news. Hear, 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 hear.
Yeah.
Yay. Great.
Now let's talk about some not good news. Green Day, they're coming out with a new album. It's called Revolution Radio. They released their opening, the first single called Bang Bang. Some of the other songs are Ordinary World, Steel Breathing, and Bang Bang. Adam White, are you excited for new Green Day? Does anyone even care about Green Day anymore? Is the Green Day horse past its prime? And I was thinking about this. Green Day debuted in 1986. So if Green Day was the Sex Pistols, they would have already been through 2 Sex Pistols reunions. That kind of just blew my mind, to tell you the truth. Anyway, Adam White, what did you think of this? What did you think of Bang Bang? Did you hear it? And are you excited for new Green Day, or is the dream dead?
Green Day's lost the plot. And this is the problem with the direction that they've taken, is that, I mean, on its own, the song's not particularly offensive. It didn't make me angry or anything like that. It has a bridge that I think is entirely unnecessary at the end of it that slows it all down and makes it a longer song than it needs to be. But that's what happens when you're trying to do radio signals or singles. But there is something about not just the song, but the song and really the aesthetic of this whole record that just strikes me of this band not having a particular direction anymore. And for better or worse, they peaked with American Idiot. Now, I don't actually like American Idiot all that much. But what I mean by peak with it is that they themselves decided that they were going to tie up all of the various artistic threads that they could in that bow. And then that was that. And then where do you go from after having an enormous, you know, a supposedly politically pertinent to the time rock opera? You don't follow that up with anything that's going to make sense anymore. Like that's it. You have peaked. Like there's been a climax in the movie, and it is American Idiot, for better or worse. So everything that they've done since then has struck me as meandering. I mean, they released that other quasi rock opera record right after that, which was what, 21st Century Breakdown.
Yep.
And then, which didn't really go over all that well with anyone. And then what was it after that? They released
those three albums,
those handful of albums, which I mean, speaks to, like, in the worst kind of, like, Sandinista sense, lack of an editor, where they're just doing things to do things at that point. Like, even you look at, like, the album art on those ones, they're pictures of their faces. The records are called 1, 2, and 3. Like, there's no, they're not anywhere at that point. They're just drifting around making Green Day music because they're Green Day. And then I look at this new one, and the cover art to it is, it's a jukebox that's on fire. And the single, the first song that we heard from it, is Green Day playing more or less a fast, punky political song, because that's sort of what you would expect them to do. But it's all just seems so, it's so generic at this point that I don't know what to make of any of it. Like, I barely remember this song, and I've listened to it a handful of times in preparation for this. And I there's a part of me that's really burned, because I feel like they had such a good thing with that Warning record that came out in 2000, where they were doing a transition from being young, dumb Green Day into actually really savvy pop songwriters Green Day. You know, I wanted Warning to be like, Warning could have been like their, I don't know, like what, like their Rubber Soul or something like that. Like it could have been, it could have been a step towards being like a more artistically adventurous Green Day. But all that we've got since that record, not including, is just this overwrought Green Day being Green Day because it's their job to be Green Day stuff and blah. So, I mean, I'm being overly negative because this song, I think in and of itself, is not that bad as far as a punk song goes. But it's just, you know, this is supposed to be one of the biggest bands in the world. And I'm just not feeling, I'm not feeling it.
I think that's exactly the whole, that's what Green Day's been doing for the whole, has been for 5 years. The whole, that's, that you just encompass the whole thing. They're not that bad. And that's all, the nothing more and nothing less. This, in terms of John's question, whether they're so relevant, I think they'll always be relevant to the punk scene. I think they're way more relevant to people that listen to the, you know, Billboard Top 40, which is, I guess that's fine. This song, though, encompasses exactly what Adam said about them, that it's not that bad. This song was, in my opinion, way too long. You could have cut out a minute, a full minute, and you would have gotten probably the same or better effect than what they were going for. It feels like they're kind of being forced, like they're doing it by force. They don't really want to. I mean, those three albums were mediocre. I hated 21st Century Breakdown. American Idiot, I think I outgrew after about a year. And the old stuff, you know, I think everyone loves the old stuff after, before American Idiot.
Not me!
Yeah, I know. Yes, except for John. I mean, Dookie I'll throw on every once in a while. Not a whole ton, but sometimes. I just don't know. I mean, I think this band just might need just to take a, well, they've taken a break for a while, but I think this band might have outlived its usefulness at this point, for at least the punk scene.
What I can't figure out, and I think that Green Day can't really figure out, is like, what are they supposed to be
exactly
at this point? Yeah. Because they're not playing on, like, they're definitely not doing things, I think, with the opinions of the punk scene in mind, and that's okay. But they should be like, they're operating on this weird, like, U2, Red Hot Chili Peppers level of band. But all of those bands, they went and, like, they got old, but not in a bad way. Like if you go,
Chili Peppers got old in a bad way.
Well, the Chili Peppers were never good, right? but they got old in a way that I think Chili Peppers fans can listen to them and be like, yeah, I'm an old weird creep that listens to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and they're playing weird creep music for me, and I'm cool with that, right?
Yeah.
And the same way that, like, you know, everyone's dad that's gonna listen to the new U2 record, they're gonna listen to whatever dad music U2 is putting out, and they're gonna be like, this is pleasing to me as a dad. And I say this as a dad. Fuck you guys. I don't even know who I'm insulting there. Other dads, older dads. In any case, not me. Oh, Green Day, I don't feel like Green Day figured out how to get old. Like, I think they were getting old on Warning in a good way, and then they chickened out. And then they were like, oh shit, no. All of our, we got to play music for heartbroken 16-year-olds again. And they did it, and it worked. And then they were like, do it again. It didn't really work. And then since then, they've just been like, Green Day, Green Day, Green Day, and then that's what they're doing right now. They're just shouting Green Day.
I think this band might just be having an identity crisis post 21st Century Breakdown. I mean, they've sort of abandoned that whole, like, manufactured look with the, you know, with him wearing all black and then the red tie with the mascara and the eyeliner or whatever. And after that, you know, that stuff doesn't kind of faded away, and they don't seem to, I agree, they don't seem to really know what they're doing. One thing I can't get over, and I think it's inexcusable is just the effects that they have on Billy Joe's voice on this song and other songs that they've done fairly recently. Like, don't do that, dude. Just you're a good singer, and you've proven that time and time again. Just don't put that shit on there, because it's annoying.
Well, speaking of bands that are up and coming and that the general punk community is excited about, the Menzingers, they're going to release a new album. They just finished it, actually, and they released a single called Lookers. Adam White, I believe you are a Menzo's fan. Is you not?
I'm definitely a Menzo's well-wisher. Is that what we're calling them these days?
That's what they've been called for a long time, the Menzo's. I thought you were Menzo's maniac. You're not?
I was a big fan of the
Your Restorations maniac?
No, I like both of those bands quite a bit.
Why do you hate the Menzingers so much, Adam?
I don't hate them at all. They've been personally very nice to me, and I've liked a lot of their records. I was definitely not as pumped up on their last record as I had been on several of them. I think Chamberlain Waits is very good. I think On the Impossible Pass is very good. Rented World didn't do too much for me, but hey, whatever. I didn't dislike it or anything. It just wasn't. It's not something that I'm listening to all that often, because I've sort of forgotten about it. But this new one. I can see where they're going here. And I don't know if it's where I'm going, but I can see where they're going. And they're going down a certain train of sentimentality that definitely works if you look at a lot of the past stuff that they've done. It's not super engaging for me right now. So, you know, I'm a well-wisher in that I don't wish them any particular harm, just as Mo Sizlak said. But yeah, so I don't know. I think you should go check this out. It may work for you. It may not. I don't think it's a bad song or anything like that. It's just not the vibe that I'm up on right now.
So I'm also I think I might be the Menzingers fan here. I loved the first three records. I thought On the Impossible Pass was fantastic, and I mean, as were the other two. The fourth one, I would agree with Adam. It stuck with me for like a week, and for some reason got just kind of teetered out. And after that, I haven't really listened to it since. Maybe I'll throw it on. I've thrown it on a couple times, but this song gave me a lot of hope for this record. It wasn't. I don't think it was their best song, but it sounded like kind of like a. I mean, they're not that old of a band, but they seem like an updated version of what they did in, like, Chamberlain Waits, almost. I love what really got me into this band was their use of lead guitar over to accompany vocals. And that's what they did here. So I am optimistic about this album quite a bit. Thursday was overwhelming. All three of these songs came out. Well, the Toy Guitar, this one, and then Green Day. All those came out on the same day. So that was interesting.
Thumbs up. TV.
Well, we're gonna get to them in a minute. But yeah, thumbs up for the new Menzinger song for me.
Yeah, I figure like I got to spend some time with it. I'm not writing it off, but it just so far.
It's not their most lively, but yeah.
Is this a band that was mad at me, and to a degree, rightfully so?
Probably.
Not my thing, you know. Not my thing. I'm a well-wisher that I don't wish them any specific harm. I don't quite understand why the punk kids love this so much. It seems very calm to me and very gentle, and I'm just not into calm, gentle music, generally speaking. What I am in is the far out crazy stuff, and that's why I'm into punk. But it seems like no one else is into far out crazy stuff. Case in point, Psychic TV. Psychic TV is the band fronted by Genesis Peorage. Adam White, you know who Genesis Peorage is, don't you?
I don't immediately recall who Genesis Peorage is.
Throbbing Gristle.
Throbbing Gristle.
You know who Throbbing Gristle is, right?
I do know who Throbbing Gristle
is. Okay, yeah. Genesis Peorage is one of the main Throbbing Gristle people. He's not a man. He's not a woman. He's Genesis Peorage. As the listeners might know, he was married to Jane Peorage, or was she Genesis Jane, or Jane Genesis, or Genesis Peorage? Jane, I think you're Lady Jane Peorage. And she was a woman, and he was a man, and they decided to get surgery to each become identical to the other, and eventually being one being. She passed away, so now there's only Genesis. And so Psychic TV, in many ways, is the sequel to Throbbing Gristle. If you don't know Throbbing Gristle is a challenging... It's not even a band. It's a challenging group. And they like they don't make music. Well, I mean, they're not around anymore, but they have like four albums, I think. They don't make music. They make sonic experiments, if you will. And it's not meant to be like, yeah, that's a good tune. It's almost like an experiment in texture to see how different sounds, clips, and vocals work against each other. It's pretty far out. Some would say it's pretentious, and I might agree, but it's certainly very unique. Psychic TV is the sequel to Throbbing Gristle, but it's more... Well, actually, Psychic TV has over 100 albums. Like, there's a ton of Psychic TV albums, and they're all different, but the general default Psychic TV fallback is kind of, I guess what you'd call proto-industrial or industrial... tempered by Genesis Peorage's weirdness and stuff. The new album is coming out. It's called, Alienist. It only has four tracks, and two of the tracks are covers. One's a cover of Nielsen's Jump in the Fire, Harry Nielsen, which I'm very excited to hear that, and the other is a cover of The Creation's How Does It Feel. The Creation was a mid-60s psychedelic UK garage band. The debut single, Alienist, was released, and I mean, honestly... nobody even cared about this. Like, Genesis Peorage is an incredibly important person who's done a lot of far-out stuff and really has pushed the boundaries in music, but no one cared about this at all. And to be fair, this track actually isn't even that challenging. This track is almost like a dance track. I thought it was interesting. I think four tracks of this would be a lot, but I think as a standalone 12-inch single, this would be actually kind of a neat thing to put on and just kind of groove to. Ricky, what did you think of... Oh, but actually, here's the other point. And Psychic TV certainly is a weird, challenging group. But because so many bands have copied Psychic TV, and because Psychic TV has been doing what they're doing for so long, is this music even that weird or challenging? Or is this just kind of, you know, music that's not that uncommon to hear? Ricky, what was your take on Alienist?
You know, it sounds like... I wish I had this context before you had... before I'd listened to it. I wasn't into it. I'm not a fan of this. What sounds like you're talking about is like the sound collage kind of stuff that kind of gets a little abstract that I don't have patience for. So I'm taking a hard pass at this.
I was cool with this myself because I like stuff that gets weird and droney. Well, I mean, I just played you an Adonis song earlier in this show, but this feels like it could have been, I don't know, like 2 minutes and 39 seconds long. And I would have been totally fine with it, but it was sort of 9 minutes long. but like 9 minutes long of sort of the same thing. At a certain point, like 5 or so minutes into this, I'm going to admit, I just started kind of just like jumping ahead. And being like, where's this going? And it's not going anywhere. It's going where it went in the first 2 minutes, but just for several more minutes.
Do you think that's an experiment in repetition and an avant-garde daringness, or is it just laziness? Or do you think maybe this music was recorded on drugs and people on drugs can groove the same thing over and over and over? I cite the Grateful Dead.
Probably I vote drugs, both. Sir.
Drugs, yeah. Well, anyways, this is not a great track. It's kind of a cool track. I'm very excited to hear the Nielsen cover Jump in the Fire. I think that could be really far out if they put the effort into it. I missed seeing Psychic TV last year. I'm really sorry I didn't go. Apparently, it was crazy. They played a small place in Philadelphia, and apparently it was just absolutely insane. I really wish I had went. What I was going to say is, anyways, it does bum me out that the farther out stuff just doesn't get the play in the punk community these days. Is that true, or do I have blinders on?
I think this might have been a little too... I'm probably going to get this description wrong, but like this is just too like electro for me, and maybe for other people. Like, I think people want to hear guitars, drums, and bass.
and screaming. But that's not what punk rock is always about. I mean,
I'm not saying that's what it's all about. I'm just saying, like, that's, I think that's what people in the punk scene are looking more for.
But why? Why don't, I mean, are there any really far out punk bands that are popular these days? I mean, like, all the popular bands, like Beach Slang is just like very calm and gentle. It's not the Screamers. It's not the Units. Yeah, it's not Nervous Gender.
But were any of those bands you just mentioned ever all that popular, or were they always the fringe bands?
They were popular in the LA punk scene in the earliest part of LA punk rock.
So they were always the fringe bands.
Exactly. Yeah. I think what you're doing, John, is you're pushing. You found a fringe band that you like that you're pushing, and no one and. Maybe
it's
no.
It's not me. I mean, listen. I'm not Mr. Psychic TV. I mean, there's a whole community of people that are insane over Throbbing Gristle and Psychic TV. I'm just trying to bring this to the punk masses.
I think you're doing God's work, but I don't think that you can be offended if they don't give a shit.
But I don't care if people don't give a shit over Psychic TV. This is not an amazing track. But it's like no weird bands are being embraced at all. No weird bands, you know.
Perfect time for one to come out then.
That's what I'm saying.
So maybe this isn't it.
I'm not saying Psychic TV is the savior of modern punk rock. Well, Psychic TV's been around for 40 years.
No, but they've done what they want to do. To come back to your point, and this is where I think that I don't know what I mean by we, but where I think that punk rock doesn't go as far as it could is, and you come back to say the Menzingers here, because there's a band that are they four or five albums in with this one?
This will be number five.
This will be number five, right? So you have four albums on which you've done, in my opinion, some great shit.
Yes.
But you're coming up on your fifth album. You can afford to get a little fucked up at that point. And I mean, I compare every band to The Clash, and I'm always just saying that like there was not a lot of sonic consistency between like the self-titled and Combat Rock, right? But there's probably way more sonic consistency between, you know, Hold On Dodge and whatever this new Menzingers record is called.
I don't know. I mean, the last one, the Rented World, was compared to like, you know, A Lesson was pretty tame.
Yeah, but it's a smaller range. Like they're playing with tempo and this and that, but they're not. I mean, it's not as big a artistic leap. I'm not even saying The Clash necessarily took a good artistic leap, because Combat Rock is not their best record or anything. But it's just that like they took a leap. Mm-hmm. And then you look at a lot of bands that we like these days that never really take that leap. I mean, Bouncing Souls is a good example too, where they've got like what, like 7 or 8 records, if not like 12, right? Like, I don't know, right? There's lots of Bouncing Souls records. And yeah, there's some that are definitely better than other ones, but there's not a whole ton of variation between what they're doing on one and the other. So I like, to John's point, there's a lot of sameness that we get out of like today's punk rock, and not a lot of bands doing anything that like takes a serious zag than what they've been doing, you know? So,
But why? Do you have a hypothesis as to why? Is it because we live in crazier times, so people want things that are more reassuring than things that are scary?
It could very well be, and this sounds totally bad to say it, but a very realistic economic decision where like, hey, you might be able to eke out a living doing a certain thing. Maybe you shouldn't fuck with that all too much.
That's a good point.
It's more risky to be daring, because if you wipe out in the modern music scene, there's no coming back. Whereas if the Clash wipe out on Sandinista, well, they can always come back with another hit.
Well, that and the like, I look, even like a band like the Menzingers that tours all the time and is on a big label, they ain't making all that much money. And the line between, you know, being able to be in a modern punk band as a career, as your life, as your full time job, and, you know, working in a lumber yard is probably a lot closer than it would have been back in the era when there was money in music.
So you think the product dictates the consumer rather than the consumer dictating the product. You're saying that because bands are sort of forced to play it safe for economic reasons, that's what the fans are gravitated towards, instead of fans saying, no, I don't want this boring stuff. I want crazy, weird stuff.
I'm saying that at no point in the Menzingers' existence is someone going to blow into their office in a zoot suit, give them a briefcase full of cocaine and $70,000 and say, do whatever you want, brothers. We'll bring you more money in a minute. That's not going to happen.
Now, Ricky, play us your favorite track that was presumably recorded under the influence of $70,000 zoot suits and suitcases of cocaine.
All right. We have a few Twitter followers that are supporters of the podcast, and one is named Thomas. He'll tweet all three of us, actually, every once in a while. But he's a big supporter of the podcast, and we like that. And he told me, and this guy's name is Thomas. I don't think I should say his last name just because I don't know if he wants me to or not. And he's in this band called, he's in from the UK, and he's in this hardcore band called Natterers. And he sent me their demo, which came out late last month-ish, and it's quite good. It's called Demo 16. I reviewed it and really enjoyed it. And it's some really original hardcore. They have the EP for sale on their Bandcamp. On cassette, and there's only like a limited 100 of them. So if you want one of those, check that out. They had their record release show, I think, on August 13th, opening for the Adolescents. And I think they're starting to get a little bit of notoriety. I saw some former Punk News, some Punk News alum also talking about them on Facebook and stuff. So I think they're starting to get around a little bit. So this is their song And No Birds Sing by Natterers.
And we are back, and we're running long again. I promise we'll do a short episode soon. We just have so much to talk about. I say it every week, but I do feel we run too long, and that really the perfect time for a podcast is 1:10. We've been running like 1.5 hours lately.
You know, so if we cut out all the hip hop, we'd be right on time.
Yeah,
but we got to talk about it. People want to hear about the hip hop.
No. As we were recording this episode, someone tweeted me and said, "Please God, no more hip hop this episode."
So we talk about it for 1/2 hour.
Yeah.
Well, listen, let's talk about hip hop some more. John K. Sampson, he's releasing a solo record. It's called Winter Wheat. It's out October 21st via Anti Records. They also released their first single. It's called Post Doc Blues. People on Punk News, speaking of quiet, gentle music, are mega fans of the Weaker Thans. I mean, people love the Weaker Thans. So this is essentially a Weaker Thans record, or close to it, because it's got 3 out of 4 of the Weaker Thans on it. And Adam White, I know being a Canadian, you're a fan of the Weaker Thans. Are you excited for this jam? Did you like this tune? And what do you think of the title Winter Wheat? I mean, could one possibly come up with a more sedate title than Winter Wheat?
Well, his last record was called Provincial. So Winter Wheat is right in line. I mean, he's from the prairies, or at least the edge of the prairies, so he's allowed to call things...
Is he a cowboy? Is John K. Sampson a cowboy?
He's not a cowboy. He's from Winnipeg, so he's right on the cusp. You know, the plains, they begin out there, and they just roll on. Anyways, this is... and John, I was fully ready to fight you about this because I thought you were gonna come down hard on it because of your anti-soft music.
Man, honestly though, I might have to re-up my anti-soft music crusade because there's been a lot of soft music lately, and a lot of people are like, "Oh, this soft music is so great." It got me into some trouble a couple of years ago because some bands were taking it personally, which, I mean, I shouldn't have been attacking specific bands. I should have been attacking the genre as a whole. Man, I might have to become the anti-soft music crusader again and just hit people with noise.
We should have talked about the toy guitar song this week, but, you know, whatever.
In any case...
You don't think that's soft music, Ricky?
I think for what they're doing, it was actually kind of surf. Punkish, garagey, and I really enjoyed it.
My point in that Ricky thinks this is hard music.
All right. Anyways, toy guitar is off schedule. We'll get to that.
It was just so good.
I haven't actually heard it. Now I want to hear it. I didn't even know it came out.
It's so good.
I wish there was a website that would post these things.
I know, seriously.
And then we would find out about them. So new John K stuff came out of nowhere. No one really knew that this was in the works. It's super pleasant and lyrical and poetic in the kind of weirdly modern way that John K has been in the last few things. I mean, for being someone that does a lot of stuff that is... That falls closer to the realm of poetry than songwriting a lot. He does not, and I appreciate this quite a bit. He doesn't fall onto like old lyrical cliches and things like that. Like if there's one thing about a John K song, at least post Weaker Than John K, is that his stuff has all sorts of like weird modern references in the songs. That's almost off-putting to hear. He'll talk about technology and computers and just like these like really mundane-y kind of modern life things, but in the context of one of these folk songs that he's putting out. And I feel that like a lot of bands that will play, especially a lot of former punkers that go out and play stuff that I guess would fall into kind of the folk realm, they all try to do it where they're writing songs that are like, you know, here's another Woody Guthrie song, and they're written with all of these, I feel like timeless language that's in them. But John K is like, no, he's going to sing about, you know, he's going to, if it makes sense to talk about Skype in one of his songs, he's going to talk about Skype. And I think that's super interesting for him, especially someone that has with the Weaker Than such a reputation of, you know, singing about wheat fields and things like that. So yeah, this is neat. It falls definitely within that realm. If you liked the stuff that he put out on Provincial a few years ago, you'll definitely be down with this. It is exciting to me that most of the Weaker Thans are involved in this because that's probably the best we're going to get right now. And yeah, so I'm totally stoked. That's where I am.
I'll keep this short. For me, this didn't do a whole lot. I see when John talks about the softer stuff, I do see this here. I was never really a Weaker Thans fan, but you know what? It wasn't offensive or anything to me. So, you know, good luck to him.
Well, listen, if there's anything I love, it's an album about wheat. I mean, I love learning about all the facets of wheat, you know, how it's grown, when it's harvested, and how it's packed. I love hearing about songs about wheat. Let me tell you. No, but listen, actually, I didn't think this was that bad. Was it Weaker Thans the Reunion record? Is that what it's called?
Reunion Tour was one of their latter ones. Yeah.
Yeah, I hated that record. I thought it was the cheesiest, most boring thing I ever heard. And this at least had a little bit of oomph to it. It still is a very gentle, calm record, but at least there's some drive to it. So at least he's trying. People say, well, it's because it's about the low lyrics and it's about the poetry. But then I listen to like Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan does not come off as, you know, wimpy or wheezy. Like Bob Dylan is like, you know, you don't quite know what's going on, do you, Mr. Jones? You know, And there's such an edge to Bob Dylan, and he's just him and the guitar, and these other guys just so gentle. But I didn't think this was terrible. I thought it was leading in the right direction. Adam, I know you're a big fan, so I'm not trying to diss. But I actually thought it was okay. And if the whole record was like this, I actually thought it might be sort of an interesting record. Or I do like it when they get like really weird and freaky, like Joe Jack Talcum does on some of his solo stuff. Anyway, I'm going off topic. Hey, Ricky, here's a band that you're a big fan of, AJJ. They've released their new album. Well, not released, they're streaming their whole album, The Bible 2. It's out next week on Side One Dummy Records. And actually, AJJ is a pretty big band these days. Ricky, I know people had a lot of expectations following the last record, Christmas Island. I thought Christmas Island was fantastic. I thought it was nuanced, complex, very freaky, and very scary. So even though it was a little gentle sounding, the actual lyrical content was like nasty as hell, kind of Bob Dylan style. What did you think of The Bible 2, Ricky? I guess he's not there. Adam, are you there?
Ricky's dead. I'm here.
I guess he.
Oh, wait, I'm here. Much. I'm here. Sorry. My. I put my thing on mute because I had to type. But,
Ricky, are you typing during the podcast? That is not acceptable.
Well, I muted my mic so that you wouldn't,
Ricky,
hear it.
You are supposed to give 110% of your attention to the podcast while you're on the podcast. It's a privilege, not a right, Ricky. A privilege.
Can I? All right, let me get into
AJJ.
Adam
and I are
going
to have a long talk with you. That's about this fine. Off air.
Yeah.
We'll continue.
Okay.
For the time being.
Yeah, sorry about that. My physical copy came in the mail a couple days ago. They got it out really early. I think those who, longtime AJJ fans, will like this, especially I think if you liked where they went with Christmas Island, where they, I think it was more of kind of like this whole band collaboration instead of just the two guys needing extra help with backing instruments. I don't know if it's as dark as Christmas Island lyrically. I think there definitely are times where it's dark, but there's a lot of, and this is what I love about them, there's a lot of like just like, you know, the self-loathing lyrics are what really I love about the band. Super brutally honest lyrics. My favorite tune as of right now is American Garbage. I mean, some of the lyrics are funny and self-deprecating. One thing that I was kind of interesting was the song No More Shame, No More Guilt, I might be getting that backwards, actually. But that song makes me wonder if they're kind of veering off from that whole self-deprecating lyrical thing. And they're not in this one, but I don't know if that's the kind of like a signal that that's where they're going. But overall, it has like that garage indie rock direction. There's a little bit of folk punk, and then there's kind of stuff that's all in between. But yeah, Golden Eagle's great, American Garbage, Cody's theme, overall thumbs up. I think they did a great job on this one. I don't know if it's better or worse than Christmas Island, but you can tell like they've definitely, since they've become a full band, they've been able to maintain their, that, you know, they've been able to keep that whole like angsty folk punk thing, but also kind of explore more since becoming a full band. So that's kind of what I thought about it. I don't know what you, did you guys listen to it?
This is so good. This
right?
is really, really good.
Really?
Yeah.
I think this is incredibly good. A lot of the times when I am listening to stuff that the wider punk world says that I should go listen to, I'll be at work and I'll put it on and it'll be playing as I'm doing what I do. And then like, and it doesn't really, nothing in it grabs me. This fucking grabbed me. I listened to this several times today and I'm into this lyrically so much of it.
Right.
And I listened to Christmas Island when it came out and everyone was all about it. But I like outside of the initial, you know, okay, I have to go listen to this because everyone's talking about it thing, I don't remember any of it. It's not a record that at all stuck with me. And that's probably more my problem than that record's problem. And I have to go revisit it now because I really like this one. But there's so much stuff on here that I'm into. Like, lyrically, yeah, like the self-deprecating thing, sure. But just there's a defiance that's in the lyrics on this. And I mean, a lot of it is really clearly kind of pointed at religion. And I think at this expectation that you have to live a certain way, have to believe a certain thing, have to act in a certain way, have to be positive. Like there's such a pushback against that lyrically repeatedly on this record. The song 7 on is called White Worms. And that song is just in my head all day long. There's so many little lyrical nuggets just on that right? individual
that's,
song.
That's what they've always done.
Totally latched onto as just being like I listen to that song and there's like parts where I'm just thinking like, yeah, fuck you. Right. So yeah, I'm astonished how much I'm into this. Having listened to and ignored most everything this band has put out to this point, and having treated their whole name change with a fair degree of sarcastic scorn, I'm into this in a way that I don't understand.
See, really, I was not feeling this record at all. I thought that Christmas Island was great because it was so nuanced, so complex, so tight, so ornate, and also like all the lyrics kind of wrapped around each other, like characters would appear, themes would reappear and disappear and appear throughout the album, and it felt very complete and very full. I thought this just felt like a scattering of songs. I actually really liked how they decided to use new instrumentation and new sounds and kind of rock bass and non-rock bass stuff and went beyond just the acoustic thing. So I was really excited when I heard the actual sound of the record. But then I think a lot of these songs are just kind of too spacey. I don't feel like these songs are that compelling or that gripping. I feel like I find myself waiting for the song to be over so they'll get to the next one. I don't feel that drawn into this. And I don't think the lyrics are quite as, I don't know, as biting as the Christmas Island lyrics were. I thought Christmas Island was incredibly dark, incredibly biting, perhaps even insightful summation of the human condition. I just thought this was some kind of clever lyrics that never really kind of came to any cohesive message in the song or the album itself. I'll listen again, but I thought when I heard, you know, the new sounds coming from Andrew Jackson Jihad, I thought, wow, this might really be the record. This might really be the quantum leap. But I feel it was a fumble in that, like, none of the songs really kind of grow to anything. And they all just kind of start out and just kind of fade away without really coming to any point, both sonically or lyrically.
See, I think for me, because, you know, I've been listening to this band for a while now, I think for me, in the context of their whole discography, like, there's just some things that they do that just, like, that just kind of made me just kind of laugh and be like, oh, shit, like, they just kept, you know, they kept doing this thing and lyrically, or they, you know, they decided to veer off that way. And so I think in the context of the whole discography, it's quite good. I think Christmas Island was definitely, I think it was darker, just in general. This one is a little bit brighter, and I think to Adam's point about being like more like kind of like pushing back against stuff, I think this one's a little bit more has like a little bit more drier humor. But overall, I really do enjoy this.
I think what I like about this is that it's probably, I mean, I think what John said about Christmas Island makes sense in that. If I don't really recall it, but if it was as complex and nuanced as you're saying, then that's probably why I didn't get into it, because I wasn't really paying enough attention when I was listening to it. This I don't think is maybe that deep, but it's scrappy, and I kind of like the scrappiness.
I feel it's undercooked, not scrappy.
See, and also I thought in some ways, Christmas Island was a lot more blunt lyrically than this one. I think you look at Coca Pelli Face Tattoo, Children of God; those are very blunt, very. They're in a very AJJ way, like in that kind of like, kind of sarcastic way. But I thought this one was a little bit. I think they just kind of went in a different direction than I think they kind of pulled a fast one on everyone here. I honestly was surprised.
See, I think they didn't pull a fast one. See, I think a fast one would have been like they really like, you know, do something completely different and wild. To me, they just kind of took the standard AJJ lyrics and put some new musical backing under, which I thought was cool. But the musical backing didn't seem to be, you know, developed enough for me. It's just like, okay, here's a new sound. We're just going to repeat that new sound for 3 minutes and, you know, do the kind of lyrics that we usually kind of do.
You know what? I think this is an interesting one because we're so across the board on it. So here's what we're gonna do. Everyone's homework, rather than hip hop this week. spend the week fighting over like personally fighting over this record. Get to know it, and we'll come back to this next week and figure out if the new AJJ record, which has the title of The Bible 2.
It's a very God, I'm blanking on the word. The title of the record is
Ricky's very, having very a stroke bold. Right now. So
it's a very bold title.
It's a very title for
bold. The title is very much a title.
It is indeed.
I said
a title.
Bold title.
Well, it is written in bold. That is true.
The title is written in bold. Get the fuck out of here.
Speaking of a bold move, let's close tonight up with a wacky story. I don't know if this is wacky or not. Billy Corrigan, who I always thought was Billy Corrigan, but it's Billy Corrigan. I've been wrong for the past 20 years. He's the new president of TNA Wrestling. And from the press release, it seems like he's actually going to be making like actual business decisions about the direction and story of TNA Wrestling. TNA Wrestling is the second biggest wrestling league after WWE, which used to be WWF. Prior to being president of TNA, he was the senior producer, creative and talent development. Adam, why is your bullshit detector going off? Is this purely just like they're leasing out his name, or do you really think Billy Corrigan really is Mr. TNA Wrestling now, and he's handling the fundamental decisions of the brand? And also, what is up with the connection between punk rock and wrestling? It seems huge these days.
I don't know. I've never been on the professional wrestling thing, even as a kid. It was not a thing that I was a fan of, and I've never really been able to understand it. This is where we should have had Scott Heisel bust in here to talk about this, because this is totally his thing. Not Smashing Pumpkins per se, but talking about wrestling. So I have no, but my ability to talk about wrestling is probably worse than my ability to talk about hip hop. So I'm going to take a pass on that and say, whatever Billy Corrigan wants to do, as long as it's not murdering people, is probably fine from a legal standpoint.
Well, Adam,
that is my opinion.
Next week, I want you to watch all the matches of Hulk Hogan,
no.
The Ultimate Warrior, Andre the Giant.
No. I don't know. I don't care what Billy Corrigan does.
Don't you find this amusing, though?
It's.
You don't think it's amusing?
It's a job that someone's got to do. I've honestly, before 20 minutes ago, I've never even heard of this TNA wrestling. I assume it was some sort of, is TNA meant to be TNA? Is it a?
I think it's the only reason I know this is because I looked it up after we wrote this new show. It's total nonstop action wrestling, but I think it's supposed to be tits and ass. Like, it's a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So first I've heard of this. I know nothing about this. I'm the worst person to talk about it. Ricky?
I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit about Billy Corrigan. I agree. I don't know why everyone is... I don't understand this connection between punk rock and wrestling, except for CM Punk. And just on top of that, I don't understand the whole comics mixed with connection to... and superhero movies connection to punk rock either. So I literally, and also I've never,
that's never, for the nerds.
I'm
a nerd too. I love comics.
Other than CM Punk, I don't understand it. I never liked Smashing Pumpkins. I don't know if you know this, but you know, Billy Corgan kind of is a big, take us for what it is. Billy Corgan's kind of a big Alex Jones guy. So, there's that. And I just truly, I just said like, this is stupid and I don't care. So, if maybe I'm kind of hoping he runs TNA into the ground, because I think these organizations are stupid, but and they're fake. Most of wrestling is fake. This kind of wrestling is fake.
Hold on, you wish doom on this endeavor. You don't just want to be indifferent to it. Like you wish it failure.
I'm not gonna say I would.
That's some cold shit, Ricky.
I wouldn't. Here's the thing. I'll clarify. I wouldn't be upset.
Ice cream. I hate ice cream. I hope all the ice cream vendors die.
I would be more amused if he ran it into the ground. That's all I'm saying. You know what? If he wants to do this, do it. As long as he just, God, get wrestling out of this. I don't, it's just dumb.
Well, man, I'll tell you, we get some angry people at the Punk News Podcast. I don't care about wrestling.
Oh, write in. Right, you know what? Write in and tell me why I should like wrestling. It's stupid. I've been to WrestleMania and I felt like I got stupider. So leave me alone.
Well, listen, a lot of angry guys in the Punk News Podcast tonight, listeners. I don't care about wrestling, but I find it immensely amusing that Billy Corgan is like the director of wrestling now. I think that's hilarious. I don't know why these guys don't think that's funny, but listen, some people have sense of humor and some people have, I don't know, t-shirts. Anyways, we're going to close it out with a song tonight. You know, a lot of soft, a lot of calm, a lot of gentle music and punk rock these days. So, you know, I'm going to play something gentle and soft too. I'm going to play it's like an indie solo group, you know, one guy, just one instrument, you know, kind of like Frank Turner, kind of like Chuck Reagan, you know, one guy, one instrument, just trying to kind of put any soul out there. This is a song called When the Clocks Have Run Down. It's gentle. And the group is called Psy Warfare. Let's check it out. And that was the Punk News Podcast. We ran real long tonight. Next week, we promise we'll be shorter. Adam White, thank you for being on the podcast tonight. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
We should start the show by giving people, like, the skip points. We're like, hi, welcome to the Punk News Cost Podcast. Skip to minute 45.
What? You did not like the hip-hop discussion? I thought the hip-hop discussion was compelling.
No, personally, I think it was compelling. I think we're going to get angry mail.
Ricky.
What?
What are you?
Ricky's still mad.
No, I'm just like mad at wrestling. No, I just what do you? I'm not sure what's coming next. Say it.
It sounds to me like Ricky's already practicing for his professional wrestling persona. It's like, John, we'll settle this in the ring, and I'm taking you down. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Punk News Podcast. Rich is at podcast@punknews.org. Check it out. See you later.